ते वासुदेवाय
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवतीर्वोत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्टिकी कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकी नन्दनाय च नन्दगोपकुमाराय गोविन्दाय नमो नमः ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरोन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदामय्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपां साग्रजातां सहगणा रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपादान् सहगणा ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च हे कृष्णा करुणा सिन्धु दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वांचा कल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्येव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे We'll continue where we left off from the 11th chapter. Before we start this, I'll just do a brief recap of the first 28 verses of this chapter. Today we hope to finish this chapter. So in the beginning of this chapter, Krishna is beginning based on the questions asked by Uddhava at the end of the previous chapter, where Uddhava asked about the symptoms of a liberated soul, the difference between a conditioned soul and a liberated soul, and how does if the living entity is always pure, how does the living entity actually gets bound to this material world? So that was the question asked by Uddhava in the previous chapter. So this chapter, Krishna begins by saying that he says that your question is superficial or unnecessary, because the soul is in one sense never really bound up by the material nature, because he is eternally superior to matter. And then he says that in one sense there is no actual bondage, and therefore there is no question of liberation. in that sense the question is unnecessary. But then Krishna mentions, but in another sense, bondage and liberation, these two terms can be conveniently applied to indicate the particular situation of the individual soul with the marginal potency of the Lord. From one point of view, there is no, the soul is eternally superior to matter, so there is no question of bondage or liberation. From another sense, as long as the living entity is actually identifying himself with the body and the influence of the avidya potency, he is said to be in bondage, and when he comes out of that, he is said to be liberated. And then second verse, Krishna explained how the bondage is illusory. And then the third verse, Krishna explained, he says that a person comes to bondage because of avidya. So what is this avidya? So Krishna says that both avidya and vidya potencies, both are my energies. Because of avidya potency, a person comes to becomes bound, and because of vidya potency, a person becomes liberated. And then in the fourth verse, Krishna mentions that the conditioned life of a living entity is beginningless, but it is not endless. On the other hand, liberated life has a beginning, but it is endless. There is no end to it. Conditioned life is beginningless. Since time immemorial, we have been conditioned. But it is not endless. If a person takes to Krishna consciousness, he can become, it comes to an end. On the other hand, liberated life has a beginning. When you take to Krishna consciousness, your liberated life begins. But it is endless. It is endless. Liberated life has no end. It's like once a person goes to the spiritual world, he never comes back. In that sense, there is no end. Then in the fifth verse, Krishna mentioned, from the fifth to seventh verse, Krishna mentions the difference between the conditioned living entity and the Paramatma. Because when we talk about liberated living entities, liberated souls can refer to Nitya Mukta, can refer to the Paramatma and also to the living entity who is actually eternally liberated. So first he talks about the difference between the conditioned living entity and the Nitya Mukta Paramatma. From the 5th to 7th verse, he talks about the difference between the living entity and the Paramatma. And then from 8th verse, from the 8th to 17th verse, Krishna talks about the difference between the conditioned living entity and the liberated living entity. Conditioned soul and a liberated soul. That what he talks about from 8th to 17th verse. The 8th to 10th verse, he talks about how the liberated soul exists within the body. How the liberated soul exists within the body, how does he actually, what is the consciousness of a liberated soul, what is the consciousness of a conditioned soul, he talks from 8th to 10th verse. And from 11th to 13th verse, he talks about how your liberated soul performs his different activities like eating, sleeping, whatever activities he performs, how does he actually perform from 11th to 13th verse. And then from 15th to 17th verse, Krishna talks about the easy symptoms by which we can recognize a liberated soul. So when we talk about liberated soul is actually free from material desires, this symptom cannot be easily recognized. From 15th to 17th verse, he talks about the easy symptoms by which we can recognize a liberated soul. So all this we discussed last week, so I am just recapitulating. And then in the 18th verse, Krishna says that even for a liberated soul to attain perfection, he should perform bhakti to attain the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, even the efforts of a liberated soul are useless. And what is the analogy we discussed? What is it?
Bakri ke khante.
Bakri ka na. Cow.
Cow.
What is that related to cow?
Cow without milk. Without people suffer cold.
No, no, cow, you may put so much of endeavor to
without milk.
Maintain a cow, but the cow gives no milk. So similarly, the effort is useless. Similarly, one may actually put so much of a jnani may put so much of endeavor to study the scriptures, but if he is not able to fix the mind and the Supreme Lord, all his efforts are useless. So that is what, therefore, one should perform. A liberated soul can attain perfection by performing bhakti to attain the Supreme Lord. And then in the 19th verse, Krishna mentioned four more analogies. How if the senses are not engaged in glorifying the Supreme Lord, then the senses are useless. If the voice is not engaged in glorifying the Lord, the voice is useless. If the hand is not engaged in serving the Lord, the hand is useless. So this principle is stated by Krishna by giving five analogies. Again, he mentions analogy of a cow, maintaining a cow which does not give milk, or taking care of an unchaste wife or a useless children, the body which is dependent on others, or protecting wealth but not giving charity to a worthy person. And then in the 20th verse, Krishna mentions the literatures approved for the devotees. The 19th verse, he talked about how if a person does not utilize his tongue for glorifying the Lord, it is actually useless. So in the 20th verse, he talks about the literatures which are approved for the devotees. Those literatures which glorify the Purushavataras and the Leelavataras, and ultimately Lord Krishna. And then the 21st verse, Krishna summarizes the path of jnana. Evam jignasaya pohya nanatva brahmamatmani uparameta virajam manomai arpya sarvage. Mentioned that coming to this conclusion of all knowledge, one should give up the false conception of material variety that one imposes upon the soul and thus sees one's material existence. The mind should be fixed on me since I am all pervading. Then the 22nd verse, Krishna speaks in a way similar to what he speaks in the Bhagavad Gita 12th chapter. If you cannot fix your mind upon me, what one should do? The 21st verse, he mentioned that ultimately one should come to the point of fixing the mind upon me. Then the 22nd verse, he says that if you cannot fix your mind upon me, what one should do? One should engage in some practical devotional service and offer the results of activities to Krishna. So we discussed that in detail in the 22nd verse last time. And then from 23 to 24, in the 23 and 24th verse, Krishna starts explaining pure bhakti yoga. Like from this, he starts explaining pure bhakti yoga till that next chapter, 15th verse. From the 23rd, from the 23rd verse onwards, he starts explaining the pure bhakti yoga till the next chapter, 15th verse. So 23rd and 24th verse, Krishna explains how one should perform bhakti yoga by like constantly hearing about him, singing him and remembering him, etc. He describes different angas of bhakti. And then in the 25th verse, Krishna explains that what stimulates this type of bhakti. So 23 and 24, that from the 23rd verse onwards, Krishna begins the explanation of bhakti yoga. So Krishna began he talked about the jnana yoga, and then he culminated how the purpose of jnana yoga is to ultimately come to the point of fixing the mind on Krishna. Even a jnana yogi can attain perfection by only by practicing bhakti. So now he actually begins a description of Bhakti Yoga from the 23rd verse. He talked about few angas of Bhakti in the 23rd and 24th verse. And then the 25th verse, he discusses who stimulates this type of Bhakti.
Association
of devotees. Satsanga labdaya bhaktiya mahimamsa upasita. So then, based on this, the 26th to 28th verse, Uddhava asks a question. What are the questions? What questions does Uddhava ask?
How does it become conditioned?
That is in the previous chapter.
How to approve symptoms?
Yeah. What are the symptoms of the devotees?
Who are on the same, you know, because the working is same as the conditions.
Yeah, that this question in the previous chapter. Now I am talking about 26 to 28 verse of this chapter. In this chapter, the question is that what are the symptoms of the pure devotees, and what are the different items of devotional service approved by the devotees. So that he asks in 26th and 27th verse. And the 28th verse, he glorifies Krishna. Glorifies Krishna's causelessly merciful nature, that although you are transcendental, but you appear in this world in many forms to spread the path of bhakti, or you produce many forms of devotees to spread the path of bhakti. So Krishna is he asks two questions in the 26th and 27th verse, and then he is glorifying Krishna's causelessly merciful nature in the 28th verse. Now, Krishna starts explaining the in response to the question asked by Uddhava. Now, Krishna starts explaining from the 29th verse. From 29th to 32nd verse, in four verses, Krishna explains 28 qualities of the devotees. Just like in the 12th chapter, Krishna explains the qualities of devotees. Here he explains 28 qualities. So we'll recite these verses. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Kripalur Akrita Drohas Titikshus Sarva Dehinam Satyasaru Anavadhyatma Samas Sarvopakarakah Kamair Agata Dir Danto Mrudush Shuchira Kenchanah Aniho mita bhukshanta siro macharano munihi apramatto gabiratma dhritiman jita shatgunah amani manadakkalyo maitrakarunikakavihi agyayaivam gunan doshan maya dishtan apiswakan Dharman santyajya yasarvan mambajeta satu sattamaha.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O Uddhava, a saintly person is merciful and never injures others. Even if others are aggressive, he is tolerant and forgiving towards all living entities. His strength and meaning in life come from the truth itself. He is free from all envy and jealousy, and his mind is equal in material happiness and distress. Thus, he dedicates his time to work for the welfare of all others. His intelligence is never bewildered by material desires, and he has controlled his senses. His behavior is always pleasing, never harsh, and always exemplary, and he is free from possessiveness. He never endeavors in ordinary worldly activities, and he strictly controls his eating. He therefore always remains peaceful and steady. A saintly person is thoughtful and accepts me as his only shelter. Such a person is very cautious in execution of his duties and is never subject to superficial transformations, because he is steady and noble even in a distressing situation. He has conquered over the six material qualities, namely hunger, thirst, lamentation, illusion, old age and death. He is free from all desire for prestige and offers honor to others. He is expert in reviving the Krishna conscious of others and therefore never cheats anyone. Rather, he is a well-wishing friend to all, being most merciful. Such a saintly person must be considered the most learned of men. He perfectly understands that the ordinary religious duties prescribed by me in various Vedic scriptures possess favorable qualities that purify the performer, and he knows that neglect of such duties constitutes a discrepancy in one's life. Having taken complete shelter at my lotus feet, however, a saintly person ultimately renounces such ordinary religious duties and worships me alone. He is thus considered to be the best among all living entities.
So, yeah, so many qualities Krishna mentions. We have to actually contemplate on these qualities, because sometimes we actually take the word devotee very, in a sense, very lightly. Sometimes we utter, so we are all devotees. But when it examine these qualities, like maybe like very far away from these qualities. So in that sense, Prabhupada writes in a purport in the Bhagavad Gita, a Vaishnava should actually test himself whether he is actually developing these qualities. So, just very detailed purports are actually written. You can, I will just read through few points, but you can, I recommend all of you to go through the entire purport, word by word, every sentence very carefully. Very beautiful qualities are mentioned. So, just if you see the first quality itself, a devotee cannot tolerate seeing the world merged in ignorance and suffering the whiplashes of Maya. Therefore, he busily engages in distributing Krishna consciousness. A devotee cannot tolerate seeing the world merged in ignorance. That is Kripalu. Akrita Droha. If someone is offensive toward a devotee does not become offensive in return. Indeed, he never acts against the interest of any living entity. And Prabhupada explains that, what about the Vaishnava kings like Parishit Maharaj, who are actually punishing the criminals? So they punished without any hatred, not out of envy or malice, but actually in faithful obedience to the laws of the Lord. So Akrita Draho means one who is like he never injures others. And then he explains, like impersonalists and karmis, impersonalists because of focusing on the impersonal form of the Lord, and karmis because of trying to enjoy fruitive activities, they are actually injuring themselves. They are called as Krita Droha. But a devotee is called as Akrita Droha. They do not injure others. Finally, Prabhupada, the Hridayan Maharaj writes that a devotee never uses his mind, body or words to perform any act harmful to the welfare of any living entity. So, you see that these qualities are like the medals which a person wins. When a person is actually performed some extraordinary sacrifice for the country, the government awards him a medal, Padma Bhushan, Bharat Ratna, like that. So similarly, when a person is actually showing his steadfast devotion to the Supreme Lord, then Krishna awards him with these medals in the form of these qualities. Yeah, we should also, in the sense, as Prabhupada says, we should strive to actually develop these qualities also. One day I will get this quality, so till that time I don't get these qualities, I will behave. That is not this one. We have to endeavor also. So we have to judge ourselves by these qualities. So Titikshu, Prabhupada says that a devotee, how is he able to forgive? A devotee forgives and forgets any offense against himself, because he is not identifying himself with the body, therefore he is able to do that. Satyasara is a very beautifully is explained. Satyasara means one who lives by the truth, and one whose strength and firmness come from truthfulness. So here the truth refers to the truth that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God and we are actually eternal servants of the Lord. So by avoiding activities outside the devotional service, a devotee remains fixed in the truth, does not uselessly waste time, and thus becomes bold, powerful and steady. By avoiding activities outside devotional service, and by remembering the eternal servant of the Lord. So like that, very beautiful points are there.
Just one question. This fame. Devotee is not puffed up. 23rd,
yeah.
And even if he is famous, he does not take fame very seriously. So just I want a question in regard to fame. Like fame is actually because of one's karma or past karma, or it could be as a reciprocation of Krishna.
It can come from both sources. Fame can come because of past karma, and fame can come as a result of because devotional service also. When a person practices devotional service, primary result is actually service to the Lord. The secondary results are in the form of material benefits, in the form of like fame or some other things. Came from both sources.
Prabhupada was saying that if one performs devotional service, whatever comes, material life, fame, goodwill, and goodwill, all this, it is byproduct. It is byproduct of devotional service.
So, Muni means a devotee is thoughtful, and through intelligent contemplation avoids becoming distracted from his spiritual advancement. And by intelligence he is freed from doubts about Krishna and confronts all problems in life with steady consciousness. I want to read everything. We can go through everything. If for example, Mrudu. Mrudu means he materialist. He does not see people as friends or enemies, etc. Sthira, remembering that Lord Krishna is the basis of everything, a devotee does not become fearful or impatient. Mitabuk means like eats moderately. When necessary, a devotee can give up anything for Krishna's service, but he does not accept or reject anything for his personal prestige. Another beautiful 20th quality, Gabhiratma. As a devotee merges into the ocean of Krishna consciousness, his own consciousness becomes deeper and deeper. Ordinary superficial persons hovering on the material platform cannot fathom the extent of a devotee's awareness. And so Prabhupada, one devotee saw this photo of Prabhupada in his passport. So Prabhupada was looking a little morose or a very serious look. So Prabhupada felt that it seems that in this photo you are actually in a very morose condition. Prabhupada said, that was the happiest moment in my life, because I was actually, at that time my passport or visa was sanctioned for going abroad. So I was the happiest moment in life. So in that sense, he couldn't understand the ecstatic symptoms of a devotee, because devotee is very grave, Gabhiratma. Maitra, a devotee does not cheat anyone by encouraging them in the bodily concept of life. Rather, by his missionary work, a devotee is a true friend of everyone. Kalya, 25th quality. That's a beautiful this one. Kalya is that a devotee is expert in making people understand the truth of Krishna consciousness. Another is also translated as Kalya, means one who is expert in understanding others and accordingly actually presents. 28th quality, can read the purport of 28 quality.
Devotees explore in studying the transcendental qualities of Lord Krishna and is able to show the harmony and compatibility of the Lord's apparently contradictory qualities. It is possible through expert knowledge of the absolute nature of the Lord. Lord Chaitanya is softer than a rose and harder than a thunderbolt. But these opposing qualities can easily be understood in terms of Lord's transcendental nature and purpose. One who is always able to understand the truth of Krishna consciousness without opposition or confusion is called Kavi, or most learned.
So, Kavi means one who can actually reconcile the contradictions. Sometimes there are different contradictory statements mentioned in the scriptures. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this instance which comes is Mahaprabhu when he was going for South India Yatra, that in one sense he was so sensitive, he was taking the blessings of the Sarvam Bhattacharya. But then when he departed Sarvam Bhattacharya, he actually fell down unconscious. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not even look back. Somebody has fallen unconscious, we may think that, oh, I'll first take care of him and then after some time will continue. But Mahaprabhu, although he was so sensitive, he was taking the, without the permission of the devotees, he was not going. But when Sarvam Bhattacharya fell unconscious, Mahaprabhu did not even turn back and he just proceeded. So Kaviraj Goswami says that a great soul, he can be harder than a thunderbolt. Somebody who is actually suffering and you don't show any emotion. One can be harder than a thunderbolt and softer than a rose. So, in the sense that the apparently contradictory qualities, a devotee is expert in, he is able to show the harmony and compatibility of the Lord's apparently contradictory qualities. So, I will just go through some points in Vishnu Chakravarti's purport. These are important purport. So, in this, in the 28 qualities which are explained in this verse, 17th quality called as Mat Sharana, taking shelter of me, that is the primary quality. All the other 27 are secondary qualities. The primary symptom of a devotee is that he has taken shelter of the Lord. And all the other qualities are secondary qualities. That is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says.
27?
The 17th quality called as Mat Sharana. 17th quality. So, just like for example, you have to know, suppose if you want to judge what is actually a gold. Primary quality by which you judge a gold is that you rub it against a gold testing stone. When the golden streaks come, you understand it is a gold. But the secondary symptoms are, it is actually golden in color or yellow in color. So, yellow in color is not the primary, this one. Because when the gold is covered by impurities, it may not be golden in color, the yellow color may not be so bright, but still it may be actually real gold. And a duplicate gold, which is not gold, but it may be shining like gold. If you go by the symptom of the yellow color, then you may get cheated. So you have to know what is the primary quality by which a gold can be tested. So similarly, the primary quality of a devotee is that Mat Sharana. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains when he talks about the symptoms of the stage of Nishta, the steady faith. So he says that the primary symptoms of a person in the stage of Nishta is that Nishta means firm faith or strong faith. The primary symptoms of a person in the stage of Nishta is that he is steady in his devotional service. So he is steadily doing whatever. And the secondary symptoms are the good qualities. And then even the primary symptoms, he mentions three levels. Three levels in the sense, he says that initially the steadiness is manifest in those activities with which we do with our physical body. Like somebody is regularly doing a particular service, steadily doing, like so many devotees we see that steadily doing, say, plate washing, or they're like doing a, say, temple hall cleaning. So when we see the steadiness, that means like a symptom of a person in the stage of nishtha. And initially the steadiness is on the activities with the physical activities. So somebody will be physically regularly doing one particular service. So sometimes we may see that he may not be actually chanting regularly, but he may not be attending the classes regularly, but he is actually doing actually regularly some service. That is steadiness on the first level, steadiness on the physical platform, some service to the Lord. And then higher than that, steadiness with a steadiness on the platform of the services with our Jnanendriyas. One is steadiness on the platform using the Karmendriyas or working senses, and higher than that is steadiness of serving the Supreme Lord using our Jnanendriyas. Like a person is steadily chanting the, because it's easy to do sometimes physical service, sometimes to sit and chant, or to regularly chant our rounds, or to sit for the Bhagavatam class, it becomes quite a difficult actually. Because usually we want to do something physically, we can easily engage, but then to sit and chant or hear, that becomes more difficult. So then when a person becomes more purified, then he develops the steadiness on using Jnanendriyas also. But sometimes you may see somebody who is steadily, he is sitting at one place and chanting, or he is sitting and hearing Bhagavatam class for long hours. But he may tell, but I was sitting there, but my mind was like wandering like anything. So externally he was able to, was calm, and Jnanendriyas were actually engaged, but the mind was not steady, mind was completely unsteady. So the third level of steadiness is when he is steady in his mind also. Mind is also actually fixed in chanting the, hearing the sound vibration. Mind is also fixed in hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. That is like he mentioned these three levels of steadiness. So especially what he says is that the primary quality, primary symptoms of a person in nishtha is steadiness, and the secondary symptoms are the qualities. So he says sometimes neophyte devotees or materialistic people, what they do is that they judge a devotee not by the primary symptoms but by the secondary symptoms. So then when they judge by the secondary symptoms, sometimes there may be a devotee who may be steady in his devotional service, may be steady in his sadhana, but he may not have manifested sometimes certain good qualities. Then you may mistake a steady devotee to be an ordinary person, and you may actually mistake an ordinary person who is having certain good qualities which is coming from his previous pious karma to be actually a great devotee. It's like mistaking a real gold to be a duplicate, and a duplicate gold to be a real gold. So therefore, so he mentions that like how we should, like we will find in devotees also, we will find there are certain shortcomings. But we have to learn to focus on the essence. We have to learn on the focus on the essence, how he has taken shelter of Krishna, how he is actually steadily practicing. So we have to focus on the essence, otherwise we might actually end up offending. But in the case of ourselves, Vishnu Chakotako says, but we should actually try to see, we should judge ourselves by the secondary symptoms. We should not tell others that, oh, you should see my primary symptom, I have taken shelter of the Lord. Don't overlook my faults like that. Now for ourselves, he says that we should actually see by our second, we should test ourselves whether we have developed these qualities. And then he mentions, because the reason is that, because common people will judge ourselves, especially common people will judge ourselves not by the primary symptoms but the secondary symptoms. Therefore, it becomes a responsibility on the part of the devotee to actually develop these qualities in order to actually attract the common people. So, here some important point which Vishnu Chakravarti writes in this purport, I want to mention. So, he says that he talks about gradations of devotee. So, the four levels he mentions. First is Karma Mishra Bhakta. Karma Mishra Bhakta is like one is practicing devotional service with a desire for certain fruitive results. Karma Mishra Bhakta. And then when a person advances, he comes to the stage of Jnana Mishra Bhakti. A person is performing devotional service along with a desire for maybe liberation, etc. And then higher than that is a stage of Shanta Bhakta, Shanta Rati, or a person who is on the stage of Atma Rama. So, in which he does not even have a desire for liberation. And higher than Atma Rama is a stage of pure devotee. So, he mentions these four stages. And after that he mentions that so then he says, what is the stage of pure bhakti? The stage of pure bhakti is nothing but Anya Abhilashita Shunyam Jnana Karma Dhyanavritam Anukulyena Krishnanushilana Bhakti Ruttama. Let us anybody remember, like, what are the five characteristics of pure devotional service? The primary and secondary characteristics. That's a different thing. In this Anya Abhilashita Shunyam, this verse, this is the definition of pure devotional service. So this is like it's a very important verse. So this verse gives the primary characteristics of pure devotional service, the primary characteristics and secondary characteristics of pure devotional service. What are the primary and secondary? So we have to we should never forget this thing. This is like the most important verse, I would say, that the Rupa Goswami, the most important book written by Rupa Goswami or compiled by Rupa Goswami is Bhakti Rasama Sindhu. And Rupa Goswami is like our the foundational acharya of Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. His most important book is Bhakti Rasama Sindhu. And the Paribhasa Sutra, the thesis statement of the Bhakti Rasama Sindhu, the statement by which the entire book is revolving, is this particular verse. Anya Bilashita Shunyam Jnana Karma Dhyanavritam Anukulyena Krishnanushilana Bhakti Ruttama. So this verse, you have to understand, this talks about three primary qualities of pure devotional service and two secondary qualities. So what are the, when we talk about devotional service, what is the most primary quality? The first and foremost is devotional service is for Krishna. Krishna Anushilanam. It is for Krishna. It is the most important of the primary characteristics. And second is, it should be rendered in a favorable attitude with a desire to please Krishna. Anukulyena. This is the second. Devotional service is not just an activity which incidentally pleases Krishna, but it should be intended to please Krishna. The second primary characteristic. And the third primary characteristic is Anushilanam. Anushilanam means, it should be cultivated. Anushilanam should be cultivated by following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas and one's personal spiritual master. Anu means following in the footsteps. Or it also means it is a continuous cultivation. So these are the three primary characteristics. Is for Krishna, favorable attitude, and third is, it should be cultivated by following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. And what are the two secondary characteristics? It is described in the first line. Anya abhilashita shunya. That is, it should be devoid of any other desire apart from the desire to please Krishna. And the other secondary characteristic is jnana karmadi anavritam. Devotional service should not be covered by jnana and karma. So, of course, each thing can be described in detail, but we should never forget this verse. Like, even if you wake up at the sleep, you should actually remember. Practicing is one thing, at least we should know. Like, for Rupa Goswami, Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has empowered Rupa Goswami so that he can actually understand the mind of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Rupa Goswami is like the leader of all the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, and the most important book of Rupa Goswami is Bhakti Rasam Sindhu. The most important verse is this Anyabhilashita Shunya. So we should know this verse, and we should know this verse by and we should know this three primary characteristics and two secondary characteristics. So this is what the pure bhakti he mentions. So then he says, Krishna Sakadaku says that he mentions an important point. So he says that so in this 29 to 32nd verse, he says the verse 32 describes the devotee practicing pure bhakti. The 32nd verse. Agnya yaivam gunan doshan mayadishtan api swakan dharman santyajya yahas sarvan mam bhajeta satu sattamaha. Sattamaha means the best among saintly persons. So the 32 describes the person, devotee practicing pure bhakti. So the 32nd verse, what does it mean is that agnya yaivam gunan doshan. Having taken complete shelter of my lotus feet, a saintly person ultimately renounces such ordinary religious duties and worships me alone. And he is thus considered to be the best among all living entities. Satu Sattama. So in this regard he says, so what does he mean is that the topmost of devotee, the pure devotee, he understands what is dharma, what are the pious activities to be performed, what are the sinful activities to be rejected, avoided. He understands the religious duties to be performed. But having understood that, he rejects both the duties and he worships Krishna only. And such a devotee is considered to be the topmost devotee. So we cannot, of course, we are discussing the theory, we cannot artificially imitate the pure devotee, but he is talking about the best among all living entities. And then he says that when such a devotee who is actually complete, is only worshipping Krishna, who is performing this sadhana of, if such a devotee, who is even a sadhaka in the pure devotional platform, it's not that he may not even be a perfect, in the perfected stage, even if he is just a sadhaka of a pure devotional path, and he has not developed all the other qualities which are mentioned. But this devotee who is a sadhaka on the platform of pure devotional service, but who has not developed the other qualities, but this devotee is superior to a mixed devotee like Karma Mishra Bhakta or Jnana Mishra Bhakta, who may have developed all the other 27 qualities. Are you getting this point? So he says, one who is practicing mixed devotional service, Karma Mishra Bhakti or Jnana Mishra Bhakti, he may develop the 27 qualities which are mentioned. The first 27 qualities. The other qualities which are mentioned. But a person who is practicing the sadhana of pure devotional service, just mentioned in the last verse, 32nd verse. Even if that sadhaka of pure devotional service, if he has not developed the other qualities, but this sadhaka is superior to a mixed devotee who has developed all the other qualities. So again, the theme, as I mentioned, the focus is on the primary quality of actually taking complete shelter of Krishna and not on the secondary symptoms. So this is Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's and Sridhar Swami's. So he says that he who reaches the highest stage is the best, since he becomes endowed with all the good qualities while destroying all bad qualities. But even without reaching the perfect stage is when a person develops all the qualities. But even without reaching the perfect stage, the devotee at the state of sadhana and who does not have all the good qualities, he should also be considered the best. He should also be considered the best. And in fact, he is better than the previously mentioned mixed devotees, Karma Mishra Bhakta and Jnana Mishra Bhakta, who may have developed the other qualities. He is better than them. So this is something important to remember this. And another important point, which Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, another important point which is mentioned by Hridayananda Maharaj in the purport. So he says, how does a pure devotee, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, says, how should a pure devotee preach to others? Where is it mentioned? How should he says that what should a devotee who has not developed these qualities he should do? Such a devotee should sincerely endeavor for Krishna consciousness and should receive the mercy of the superior Vaishnavas, and then he will develop the qualities. And then he says, the beauty of a society filled with devotees with such qualities is practically like a he says it is like a spiritual world. It's like a spiritual world. And I think there's some other point. So we'll go to the next verse. Gyatva agyatvata evai mam yavan yaschasmi yadrishah bhajantyananya bhavena teme bhaktata mamata.
My devotees may or may not know exactly what I am, who I am and how I exist, but if they worship me with unalloyed love, then I consider them to be the best of devotees.
So here, this verse is also a very beautiful verse. So here he says, gyatva agyatva. A person may know or he may not know my position or my opulence or my different energies, but if he is rendering service to me with love, mai ananya bhavena, or Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that if he is rendering service to me with a feeling of possessiveness, then such a devotee I consider to be the topmost. Te me bhakta tama mata. Possessiveness means the feeling, oh, Lord belongs to me, like the example which is given, like Rajavasis, they don't know Krishna is the Supreme Lord, but they have a feeling of possessiveness. is my friend, is my child, like that. Prabhupada in the purport, he talks about how Arjuna is actually begging forgiveness after seeing the universal form. Oh, I did not, many times I mistreated you. But Krishna, he does not see whether this person knows my glory or not. He is concerned, he is basically hankering for the love of the devotee. So Vishnu Chakrataka says that Krishna, although Krishna cannot be limited by time or space, but he becomes limited by the love of his pure devotees. So the word Ajñātva indicates that sometimes a devotee may not have a proper philosophical understanding of the personality of Godhead, or due to love may temporarily forget the Lord's position. It can refer to the eternal associates like the Vrajavasis, etc. Because of love they forget. But it can also refer to some sincere devotee who may not have a philosophical understanding, but he may have genuine love for Krishna. But Krishna considers, even if that person does not know his position, Krishna considers him to be actually the best of devotees. Even if one is not capable of analytically understanding the position of God, if one simply loves Krishna, then one is certainly perfect. Many of the residents of Vrindavan had no idea that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God. So this is a beautiful point. So next verse. So now from the 34th to 41st verse, because I want to complete this chapter, so I will just take a little quickly. The 34th to 41st verse, that means in 8 verses, in 8 verses, Krishna elaborately describes the process of devotional service. So the Uddhava asked 2 questions: symptoms of pure devotees and what are the different angas of bhakti approved by the devotees. So in response, he described the symptoms of the devotees. Now he describes the angas of bhakti approved by the devotees. He describes in these 8 verses. So and read the translation.
My dear Uddhava, one can give up false pride and prestige by engaging in the following devotional activities. One may purify oneself by seeing, touching, worshipping, serving and offering prayers of glorification and obeisances to my form as a deity and to my pure devotees. One should also glorify my transcendental qualities and activities.
So, I will just take up one by one. The 34th verse, he says that one should see, touch, worship, serve, praise, offer respects and glorify the qualities and activities of my deity form and my devotees. So, basically he says, if you see, different activities are mentioned. It should be performed in relation to his deity form and the devotees. Rupa Goswami says in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, all the angas of bhakti in relation to the Supreme Lord also apply in relation to the devotees. So this explains the 34th verse. And 35th verse, you can continue.
One should glorify my transcendental qualities and activities, hear with love and faith the narrations of my glories and constantly meditate upon me. One should offer to me whatever one acquires, and accepting oneself as my eternal servant, one should give oneself completely to me.
Yeah, this is what we did, 35th verse. Matkata Shravane Shraddha. Matkata Shravane Shraddha. One should actually have faith in my topics, and one should meditate upon me. Mat Anudhyanam. And Sarva Labo Apaharanam. So this means, this is a beautiful. One should offer valued objects. Say like whatever a person has, whatever object a person has, one should think that this is given by the Supreme Lord in order to be used in his service. Thinking that this object has appeared on its own to serve the Lord. Thinking like that, one should offer all objects of attachment to the Supreme Lord. And it's also mentioned that it related to the objects, and Dasya in Atma Nivedanam, like one should offer one's body and the soul to the Lord since one is in the position of a servant. Next verse.
one should always discuss my birth and activities and enjoy life by participating in festivals such as Janmashtami, which glorify my pastimes. In my temple, one should also participate in festivals and ceremonies by singing, dancing, playing musical instruments and discussing me with other Vaishnavas.
Yeah, this is 36th verse. Gita Tandava Vaditra Goshti. This really talks about celebrating, observing the festivals, discussing about Krishna's birth and activities, observing different festivals, annual festivals, seasonal festivals, etc. And in this verse, Vishnu Chakotakur says the difference between Anukirtan and Katan. The 34th verse, the word Anukirtan comes. In the 36th verse, the word Katha comes. He says the difference is that Anukirtan is accompanied by Raga, Swara and Tala. Like sometimes we see that like Bhagavad Sapta, they discuss Krishna Katha along with the music. That is Anukirtan. And one is like simply discussing Katha, that is actually Katha. That's what it gives the mind. Minor detail.
One should observe all the regularly celebrated annual festivals by attending ceremonies, pilgrimages and making offerings. One should also observe religious vows such as Ekadasi and take initiation by the procedures mentioned in the Vedas, Pancharatra and other similar literatures. One should faithfully and lovingly support the installation of my deity, and individually or in cooperation with others, one should work for the construction of Krishna conscious temples and cities, as well as flower gardens, food gardens and special areas to celebrate my pastimes.
This is two verses, 37 and 38. So interesting thing you can note is that Krishna is telling also about maintaining flower gardens. Hridayan Maharaj says there should be a serious endeavor to construct beautiful temples with ample parks, flower gardens. So in that sense, actually constructing of flower gardens is also like we have to grow our own flower and fruits. Not only gardens is mentioned, fruits including vegetables also. This is actually, ultimately, when we talk about Patram Pushpam Phalam Toyam, true sense it means like that which is grown by the devotees and offered by the devotees with love. That's what Patram Pushpam Phalam Toyam. So here Krishna is clearly mentioning Udyano Apavana Krida Pura Mandira Karmani.
One should consider oneself to be my humble servant without duplicity and thus to help to clean the temple which is my home. First one should sweep and dust thoroughly and then one should further cleanse with water and cow dung. Having dragged the temple, one should sprinkle scented water and decorate the temple with mandalas. One should thus act just like my servant.
Just like a servant takes care of the house of a king. So Vishnu Chakatagar adds that.
A devotee should never advertise his devotional activities, therefore his service will not be the cause of false pride. One should never use lamps that are offered to me for other purposes simply because there is need of illumination, and similarly one should never offer to me anything that has been offered to or used by others. Whatever is most desired by one within this material world and whatever is most dear to oneself, one should offer that very thing to me. Such an offering qualifies one for eternal life.
So the last two verses are beautiful. The Amanitva means like one should not have pride or make a false show of bhakti, Adambitvam. In Rangana temple, one person offered like so much of jewelry for Ranganath, one king. But the king, Ranganath told the pujari, you take this jewelry and then throw this on the courtyard. Huge quantities of jewelry and this thing, real story. Throw this on the courtyard. And the pujari went and threw the jewelry on the courtyard. And when people came to know, it was rejected even by Ranganath. Nobody even took that. So why Ranganath told that pujari like that was, that because that king was actually thinking that he was actually maintaining an attitude of pride. He wanted to know that, I want to be known as one who has actually donated so much of this one. So Ranganath was not pleased with that. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he talks about the list of Seva Aparad, he classifies the Seva Aparad in 5 categories. Like Seva Aparad, as you mentioned, like say entering the temple in unclean without taking bath, or showing one's legs in front of the deity like that, shouting in front of the deity like that. So many lists are mentioned. So he classifies into 5 categories. One is disrespect, and then in worshipping the Lord in an unclean state of mind, second, and third is a lack of determination, and fourth is, he says, pride, and fifth is the pride, and fifth is negligence despite having ability. Negligence despite having ability. So that sense, so it is explained that amanitva means without pride, and one should not make a false show of bhakti, and kritasya aparikirtana means like one should not glorify one's accomplishments. And another thing he mentions is that, like, when we offer a lamp to the deity, one should not use that lamp for some other purpose, for illumination, etc. Or one should not offer to the deity which has been used by somebody else. Or Vishnu Chakravarti says, he mentions a different point, like, one should not accept articles such as lamp offered to the Lord until they are first offered to other devotees. So he is actually mentioning like that, until they are first offered to other devotees. And then the last verse is very important. Yad yad ishtatamam loke yachati priyamatmanah tattan nivedayan mahyam tad anantyaya kalpate. So he says that, like, whatever is dear to oneself. So Vishnu Chakravarti adds 3 more conditions. He says, whatever a person considers dear to himself, and whatever is best according to the scriptures, and whatever is best according to the people, one should offer to the Lord. And by this, what happens? Tad anantyaya kalpate, one becomes qualified for eternal life. He says that sometimes, according to the scripture, kusha birds are wonderful, but then from the general mass of people, it may not be considered something wonderful. So one may not offer to the Lord. So basically, the main, most important thing in this particular verse is that whatever a person considers dear, like whatever a person is most attached to, one should offer that. So Hridayananda Maharaj writes a beautiful thing. He says, if a person is very much attached to his family, then one should engage the family in the service of the Lord. If a person is very much attached to his intelligence, one should use the intelligence in the service of the Lord. If a person is attached to something valuable, he should actually offer that valuable possessions for Krishna. So, in that sense, he is mentioning a beautiful point. And he is also writing in the purport, one should be meek and humble before the Guru. So I'll just summarize the other verses. So now in the next verse, so in the these 8 verses, Krishna talked about, in one sense, in these 8 verses talk about, like, direct angas of bhakti. Performing festivals, or growing flowers for the Lord, hearing, chanting, like that, like different items, offering that which is most dear to oneself. Now in the 42nd verse, Krishna is explaining how one should worship me even not just directly in the temple, how one should actually worship me even in, when we see common things in this world. So he mentions 11 places of worship. We'll decide this verse. Suryognir Brahmanagavo Vaishnavakammarujjalam Bhuratma Sarva Bhutani Badra Puja Padani Me. So sun, fire, Brahmana, cows, Vaishnava, sky, wind, water, earth, individual soul and all living entities. Because this verse you mentioned, because sometimes the nature of a Kanishtha Adhikari is that he worships the Lord only in the temple. So the materialistic devotee, he is actually, he does not understand the all-pervading nature of the Lord. He limits Krishna only to the temple. But advanced devotee, he sees Krishna everywhere, how Krishna is all-pervading. So Prabhupada says that to avoid a materialistic conception of Lord Krishna, which means like restricting Krishna only to the temple, one should not think that the Lord exists only in a particular time and place. Rather, one should understand that he exists at all times and all places. So how Krishna is mentioning, how one should worship me in all times and all places, so for that he is mentioning 11 things. How one should worship me in the fire, the Surya, the Brahmanas, cows, Vaishnavas, ether, water, air, etc. So he is mentioning the 11 places of worship in the 42nd verse, and from 43 to 45th verse, in 3 verses, he is mentioning how do we worship Krishna in these 11 places. How do we worship Krishna in the sun? How do we worship Krishna in the fire? How do we worship Krishna in the Brahmanas? So that he explains in the next 3 verses. So in the 43rd verse, Krishna says that one should worship me in the sun by reciting the verses and performing specific Vedic rituals. And one should be in the fire by offering oblations. In the case of a Brahmana, by giving proper reception, even if he comes without any previous notice, one should actually receive him as a guest properly. And worship the cow by feeding nice grass and tickling. Cows especially like when you massage, or when you do that brushing. And then he says, in the case of a Vaishnavas, one should actually make friendship with them. And then in the case of water, simply by offering the same water to Krishna, one should actually worship. So, and then he says in the 45th verse, the method of worshipping in earth, atma and all the living entities. Says that one worships me in earth by uttering secret mantras on purified ground, and worships me in the atma by offering food to the atma in the body. One may worship me within the individual living entity by offering food and other enjoyable substances, and may worship me within all living entities by seeing the super soul within all of them, thus maintaining equal vision. So the principle we can say is that how we have to learn to see the all-pervading nature of Krishna. So we should not consider anything and everything to be Krishna. We should not consider anything and everything to be Krishna. But we have to see the presence of Krishna. Just like for example, previously people would worship even the cows on the day of, in South India we have Pongal, there is the next day of the Pongal, they worship the cows, and Govardhan Puja we do worship here. So because for the farmers, their main sustenance is through the cows. So they worship Krishna through whatever Krishna has provided them, through them they worship Krishna. So in the sense, it's not sometimes people criticize, so Hinduism is such a pantheistic, they worship anything and everything. They worship cars also. No. We don't worship car, through car we worship Krishna. Because Krishna has given the money to purchase the car. And we are worshipping Krishna who is situated within the car by putting a photo. By trying to actually remind ourselves that I am going to use this car in the service of the Lord. So in that sense, what Krishna is trying to say in these verses is that how one should actually recognize me. Not just in the temple, but one should recognize my all-pervading nature. So that is why he is mentioning these methods. And then the 46th verse he says, 46th verse is important, we will recite this verse. Dishnyeshityeshu madrupam shanka chakragadambujai yuktam chaturbujam shantam dhyayan archet samahitaha. So here Hridayan Maharaj writes in the purport, he says that after mentioning how one should worship Krishna everywhere, like Krishna has mentioned 11 places of worship, now Krishna is again coming to the point of directly worshipping or meditating on his deity form or the 400 form. Because the reason is that, like sometimes somebody may say, so main to Krishna ko hamesha puja karta hu, mujhe kuch mandir aane ka zarurat nahi, I see God everywhere. Sometimes some people say like that, oh Krishna, God is, there is no need to go to the temple, God is there in everywhere, I worship Krishna everywhere. Such people, you will see such people. But so that's why Hridayan Maharaj is saying that one should not be puffed up and claim that because one is meditating on the Lord within nature, there is no need to go to the temple. So therefore, temple worship has been repeatedly emphasized by the Lord himself, again in this verse. Sometimes people say, oh, temple worship, deity worship is meant for Kanishtha Adhikaris. I am not a Kanishtha Adhikari, one may say like that. So, but Prabhupada writes in one purport in the third canto, deity worship is recommended for Kanishtha Adhikaris, but advanced devotees should not avoid deity worship. It's like, if a person thinks he is a Kanishtha Adhikari, one should understand, oh, it is recommended for me. And if a person thinks, okay, I am not a Kanishtha Adhikari, I am an advanced devotee, then he should not avoid it. So, then Prabhupada is mentioning that. So, basically, that Hridayan Maharaj says that even within the material world, one can spiritualize one's existence by seeing the Supreme Lord within everything and worshipping Him by constant meditation. And as mentioned in the previous verses, one should also go to the temple and specifically worship the deity and participate in spiritual festivals. One should not simply say, oh, I am worshipping Krishna everywhere, so I don't need to go to the temple. So he is emphasizing one should also go to the temple, so therefore again Krishna is mentioning that. We see all the Goswamis, they were all such highly Mahabhagavatas, but then they also had their personal deities in a sense. So, but Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he gives a slightly different point. He mentions that, so Krishna has mentioned these 11 places of worship, and he has mentioned different methods by which we should worship in those places. Surya, Agni, fire, water, etc. So here in this verse he says, when we are worshipping Krishna in those 11 places, one should meditate on his transcendental form. Even when we are worshipping Krishna in those places by the methods we are following, one should meditate on his transcendental form. So that's what he mentions in this verse. Now in the 47th verse, Krishna says, the result of worshipping the Lord by the above mentioned processes. So, Ishta Purtena Maam Evam. Ishta Purtena Maam Evam means like, one who has executed sacrificial performances and pious works for my satisfaction and thus worships me with fixed attention. What is the result? He gets two results. Labate Mai Sad Bhaktim. Labate Mai Sad Bhakti means, he obtains prema bhakti. Sad bhakti means he attains prema bhakti to me. And second is mat smriti sadhu sevaya. So Hridayan Maharaj translates as, such a worshipper obtains realized knowledge of me. Mat smriti, realized knowledge of me. But Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says mat smriti sadhu sevaya means the second result is that Krishna starts remembering that devotee. He starts remembering their devotee. And then in the 48th verse, prayena bhakti yogena satsangena vinodava nopayo vidyate samyak prayanam hi satamaham.
My dear Uddhava, I am personally the ultimate shelter and way of life for saintly liberated persons. And thus, if one does not engage in my loving devotional service, which is made possible by associating with my devotees, then for all practical purposes, one possesses no effective means for escaping from material existence.
So here he says, ultimately bhakti is the only method which can deliver one from samsara. Because previously he has also described the path of jnana. But then now he is actually coming to the, like the summarily saying that prayena, ultimately bhakti is the generally for all practical purposes, prayena, for all practical purposes are bhakti is the only method by which we can deliver one from samsara. So this is a long purport. Hridayan Maharaj writes that bhakti yoga is not possible without satsanga or association with other Vaishnavas. In the case of jnana yoga, in fact, association is not recommended. Because if two jnanis are staying together, they'll end up quarreling. So we already saw that example of that Kumari with the bangles. So in the case of bhakti yoga, it's not possible without association. And then he also explains some beautiful sentence. I want to read this purport, the 785th page. So he explains two kinds of bhakti. One is kevala bhakti. Kevala bhakti is pure devotional service. And second is guna bhuta bhakti. That is devotional service polluted by the modes of material nature. Guna bhuta bhakti, it can be, can call it as mixed bhakti, etc. So then he says, one who is actually intelligent does not make a show of philosophical wizardry. Wizardry means some philosophical genius or something like that. One who is actually intelligent does not make a show of philosophical wizardry, but rather discerns the superiority of pure love of Godhead and takes to the path of kevala bhakti. Like sometimes even in the case of devotional service, sometimes when a person may become caught up with a philosophy. He may neglect the service. And then he says, one who emphasizes so-called intellectual achievements is actually less intelligent, because such a person is more attracted to intelligence than to the pure soul, which is superior. It should be understood, however, but one should not mistake that just because one may go to the other extreme and say that, that means like those who are practicing pure devotional service, he becomes non-philosophical or anti-intellectual. So one may think like that. One should not go to that extreme. The absolute truth is far more extensive than partial truth. So therefore, one who is in full knowledge of Krishna has the greatest facility to engage in philosophical analysis. Since a pure devotee is working with the entire range of conceptual categories. And only those who do not know Krishna are attracted to impersonal Brahman or the localized Paramatma, but they are not aware of the ultimate category of understanding called Bhagavan. So basically he mentions that one should not simply become involved in philosophical this thing and avoid real service to the Lord. Such a person is less intelligent. At the same time he says that engaging in devotional service does not mean that a person becomes anti-intellectual or non-philosophical. That also has its place, because Krishna is the absolute truth. He involves absolute truth means like it involves all the categories of truth. So therefore, a devotee is naturally philosophical. And then Hridayan Maharaj writes that how how by practicing bhakti it actually avoids the results of all the other processes also. Avoid the result of all the other processes. These other processes are like the nipples and the neck of a goat. It may appear to be like the nipples which may give milk, but the nipples and the neck of a goat cannot give milk. So other processes may appear attractive, but without the touch of bhakti they cannot give results. And then he gives three quotations. If you read in the next page, three quotations are mentioned, three verses are mentioned, which mentions how the process of bhakti is actually the topmost of all bhakti, all the processes. One spoken by Uddhava to Krishna, another by Shukadeva Goswami to Parishit Maharaj in the 12th canto, another by Narada Muni to Prachetas in the 4th canto. And finally he says, it is generally impossible to escape material bondage without devotional service in the association of devotees. One can simply imagine the probabilities of liberation in Kali Yuga without the Krishna consciousness movement. The chances are certainly zero. He says chances are certainly zero without the association of devotees. One may concoct a type of liberation on the mental platform, or one may live in a so-called spiritual society of mutual flattery. But if one actually wants to go back home, back to Godhead, one must take to Lord Chaitanya's movement and worship Krishna in the association of the Bhakta Gana, the devotees of the Lord. So basically he mentions that without the association of Lord, without the actually mercy of Lord Chaitanya, is practically impossible to advance. So final verse of this chapter, we'll read this verse in the end. Ataitat paramam guhyam shrinvato yadunandana sugopyam api vakshyami tvamme vritya suhritsaka.
O beloved of the Yadu dynasty, because you are my servant, well-wisher and friend, I shall now speak to you the most confidential knowledge. He is here as I explain these great mysteries to you.
So, says that the association with the pure devotees of the Lord, like similar verse as Krishna spoke in the fourth chapter in the Gita, because you are my friend and devotee, I am speaking this knowledge. Krishna is also speaking similarly. So he says association with the pure devotees of the Lord is a self-sufficient process. So other processes are dependent on bhakti and the results are unpredictable. The process of bhakti is independent and the results are guaranteed. So like that. In this way, Krishna concludes this chapter. There are some more points that Krishna Chakatak mentions. But we'll continue from the next chapter. And this Sunday, we'll take up the 12th chapter. We want to finish the 12th chapter also. Anybody has any questions or comments?
In the 42nd verse, there
is
a reference of Brahmana and Vaishnava.
Huh.
So, question is, what is the difference between Brahman and Vaishnava?
Yeah, in the sense, a Brahmana, he is expected to be a Vaishnava, but he may be, he may not be a Vaishnava. He may be just a realize the impersonal, maybe more attached to the impersonal Brahman. May be having the Brahminical culture, the Brahminical activities. May be teaching the Vedas and studying the Vedas. Sometimes he may not be the pure devotee of the Lord. Sometimes he may even be the opposed to devotional service. But he may be having the Brahminical culture.
So Seva Aparad is five things.
Seva Aparad. There are 32 Seva Aparadhas there. Those 32 Seva Aparadhas are classified in 5 categories. Because Bhaktivinoda Thakur classifies into 5 essential mood. Like sometimes you are sitting in the temple, somebody may have a certain physical physical problem, he may have to sit with the particular this one. But his mood may not be of disrespect. So therefore Bhaktivinoda Thakur classifies the Seva Aparadha in the five mood: disrespect, and uncleanliness, like worshipping the Lord with unclean, body, unclean, etc. And third is lack of determination. So you're worshipping the Lord, aarti is going on, and then you feel that I'm feeling hungry, so I'm also eating something like that. So, something like lack of determination. In between worshipping the Lord, so let me go and eat something and come. So in that sense. And fourth is pride. Well, you may serve the Lord. You may actually give a lot of you may give some valuable things to the Lord, but you may be thinking, oh, I have done this. That is that pride. And another is negligence despite having ability. Like one is, a person is having 1 crore rupees and he is giving, say, 99 lakhs to the temple, but is maintaining a proud attitude of pride. Another is, he is just giving 1 rupee. So like, he is having the ability to do more, but is actually negligent. So that is a negligence despite having ability. Or it can refer to other things also. Suppose you can offer seasonal things to the Lord, but you don't offer them. I'll just offer simple things. Who will actually go and do some elaborate things? So, yeah, what is your point? Matsharana means basically taking shelter of the Lord. That is the 6 symptoms of surrender you are talking about. Yeah, that is different places, different classifications are there. 6 symptoms of surrender: anukulyasa, sankalpa, pratikulyasa, varjita, rakshayishyati, vishwasu. But here matsharana, simple taking shelter of the Lord.
My question is a little general. In all the purposes, profusely quoted Sridhar Swami.
Sridhar Swami? Sridhar Swami is the first commentator of on the Srimad Bhagavatam. The first commentator on Srimad Bhagavatam. So, all the acharyas. They quote the first commentator, later commentators for others, many others commented. So Mahaprabhu and Vallabha Bhatta came and said, Mahaprabhu told Vallabha Bhatta, one who rejects Swami is a prostitute. Vallabha Bhatta told, he found some mistake in Sridhar Swami's commentary. I have written something which is actually supersedes. Mahaprabhu said, one who rejects Swami is considered. Mahaprabhu had great regard for him.
Was before some 600 or
He was actually even before a few hundred years back, before around the exact this one, some few centuries before Mahaprabhu appeared. 13th century. In Ramuna. Remember that in Ramuna, that Balasur, Shirshur Gopina temple is there, no? Balasur. There, the place of Sridhar Swami. Sridhar Swami, Baldev Vidyabhushan. A famous story of that lizard. His wife had died and he had a newborn baby. And he was thinking, who will take care of this baby? What happened? That lizard?
Something fell.
The insect was going nearby, and you've seen that the lizard has taken out his tongue and caught it and ate it. So we thought that even the lizard, newborn lizard, can maintain herself with the mercy of Lord. So why should I take worry about my child?
Yeah. Then he, of course, we can't literally follow that, but the point is that, yeah, the principle is that how he had faith in the.
But that can be in the material life. children and the parents worry about their future and their education. Whereas the Prabhupada said that even if take them to Krishna consciousness, your worry should not be there. So that is the only main duty. So like wizard, the Lord will take care of their education, marriage and everything.
Thank you. Nantaran Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai. So I'll send questions for Sunday test, today, tomorrow or day after I'll send. So on Sunday we will have the summary or the breakup of this chapter, chapter 11, and the further questions I will be sending. Other questions.